Welcome back to the Wannabe Hunting Podcast. Thanks for listening today. This is your host, Amos Medford. And for those of you who listen each and every week, you'll notice that I once again have a scratchy throat. But anyway, I'll get through the intro, and I appreciate y'all tuning in today. Thanks so much for listening and following along. Today I'm joined by Chris Chain of My Season Report. Really interesting episode. Chris has done a lot of work to compile information to help hunters going out to know what's in season and what's not, and that can be super helpful. We talk about that with some predator type hunting and things like that. You know, if you're out there and you see something, can you take a shot or not? You know, and he's really compiled some information, a ton of information, to help streamline that for you. So I'll let Chris explain that in the episode. You can also check out his website. I believe it's seasonreport.com. That'll be in the show notes as well. So appreciate everyone listening and tuning in. And I hope you've had a good weekend. Maybe you've got some habitat work in, or just taking it easy. We hope it's going well for you. I do want to mention today's episode is brought to you by Anabolic Grow. They've done some great research, and you can hear about it in episode 26 that I did with Todd Karen, who's with them. So the simple way to put it is Anabolic Grow's products make for higher yields, better nutritional content, and maximized habitat for the wildlife that's utilizing your property. So whether you're doing just some half acre or quarter acre food plots somewhere on a small spot, or if you've got dozens of acres, you know, on a full-size farm, you'll want to maximize your work as you're getting ready for deer season. So Anabolic Grow helps you do just that. Be sure to use Wannabe Hunting 10, save a few bucks on your order, and we appreciate them supporting the show and want to support them back. So thanks to Anabolic Grow. With that said, let's jump in to this episode with Chris Chain of My Season Report.
Hello.
Hey.
Hey, how you doing, man?
I'm good. How are you, Chris?
I'm doing well. Busy. Sounds like we're both busy.
Yeah. Yep. That can be a good thing, though. So, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Awesome, man.
You sound great. Am I coming through well?
Yeah, you're coming through pretty good. Are you at, like, a computer or just on your phone, or how's it?
On my phone with some headphones.
Okay. Yeah. Shouldn't be a problem. I was just going to mention that sometimes if your phone goes to like an auto lock screen, that'll cut your audio.
Okay.
So I have had that happen with guests before, but some folks change their setting or whatever to like not turn the screen off, or I sit here the whole time like fiddling with the screen on mine. So either way is good, but that might be something that would cut the audio, like if your phone like goes to a lock screen. It actually might. Okay, I was gonna say it actually might have already done that. Is that what happened?
What's that?
Did your phone maybe go to a lock screen or something?
No, but it probably turned off as I was going to turn the lock screen off.
To do that, so. Yeah. So there you go. But should be good to go now. I've got you back, so.
Cool.
But yeah, you sound good. So.
All right.
I do almost all of it on my phone. Not that I'm opposed to getting, you know, a nice mic and everything like that, but that's.
Well, you sound better than some mics I've talked with, so there's that.
Well, I appreciate it. I know I've talked to guys that have full equipment and everything, and I've been really quiet, or they've been super quiet, and by all accounts, they have all the gear you could want. So I don't know what the deal is, you know.
Sometimes. I mean, it's kind of like having the best bow and just not having it tuned, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That is true. You do still have to set all that up and tune it up, so.
Now, I just stepped outside and it's pretty windy. Is this going to be a problem, or are we good?
I can hear the wind, but I don't think it's a problem. I mean, I've talked to guys who've been outside before. I mean, I'm not going to stress over it.
All right. I think we're good then.
Okay. Okay. I'll let you know, like, if I start to, you know, not be able to understand or hear or something, you know, I'll try to give you a heads up, but.
All right.
Cool, man. Well, I'm excited to, you know, kind of learn more about what you've got going on. I mean, I've been to the website and everything, so excited to kind of get a rundown of what you offer. And, you know, I've definitely been one to quadruple check season dates and zones.
Yeah.
And so sounds like a pretty compelling, pain point, I guess, to help solve. So
no, I like the way you put that. I've described it as like a friction point, but I like it. It is a pain point where it's easy to develop an OCD about it.
Right. Yeah. And, I'm going to kind of go ahead and jump in. I was going to stop and cut in, but you know, that's kind of a good spot to start. And the edit will come out fine, but you know, it's kind of a pain point to figure out, season dates and depending on what species you're hunting and where you live, you know, some states do stuff by counties, some do by zones, some are statewide. You know, that's kind of where my season report comes in. Is that right, Chris?
Yeah, no, you nailed it. Yeah. So it started as, seasonreport.com and, you know, on Instagram and Facebook, it's at my season report, but you nailed it. It's my attempt at trying to solve that problem when you're in the field and you see an animal come out and you're like, oh, I know I have a tag for that, but I didn't think about is it in season? You can quickly pull it up. Or if you're loading up the truck for the trip to the cabin or wherever you go hunting with the buddies, just check it real quick. Everything that you care about is instantly brought to you with one click. And I know I've personally got a duck that way because I didn't realize that there was an early season duck split. I was like, oh, well, all right, I'll go ahead and do that. And then sure enough, got on some ducks. And, you know, I'm still learning ways that this is useful. I started by making the planning of it much simpler, but I'm constantly discovering new ways in the field that it's extremely useful.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. And you said it started as a website, but now is it like an app basically?
So it is seasonreport.com. It's a website, but the app is in motion, we'll say.
Okay. Okay. I got you. Yeah. Not to jump ahead. That's cool, man. And you know, I think almost everybody who's been hunting, you know, more than a couple of times has had a situation like that. You know, where like a predator type animal steps out or something along those lines. And first inclination would be to take it. But in the back of your mind, it's like, well, is there a season for that? And if so, is this it? And, you know, things along those lines.
Yeah, I mean, I hunt in Virginia, and the two counties I mostly hunt at have different season dates for deer, bear, turkey, everything. And so it's just, all right, well, I'm free this weekend. Cool. I want to go hunting. All right. Well, if I travel out there, it's going to be not season, or it's not season here and I got to travel out there. And so in the fall, I just found myself looking at all that stuff constantly.
Yeah, no doubt. And I hunted out of state for the first time last year. Interestingly, with my brother who lives in Virginia. And I remember looking up the season dates and everything, and it was kind of crazy for me, you know. Because I wasn't used to the county by county thing. And
yeah,
you know, we were hunting in the county over from where he lives. You know, I'm not giving away any public land spots or anything like that, but we're in Amherst County. And you know, I'm just like, I don't even know. And then we ended up in a spot early one morning. It was still dark. And, you know, there's a turkey making some noise behind us. He's like, I'm pretty sure you can take a turkey with the thing. And I'm like, I don't know. It didn't come by us. We didn't have to make that decision. But, you know, it was like there were some questions like that definitely popped up in my mind, you know, even in a limited circumstance like that.
Yeah, and I mean, there's also non-hunting ways that it comes up. I was in the mountains and I heard dogs running bear. And we actually had a bear with her three cubs roll right up on us. I mean, we saw so many bear inside of a day, and they were all being chased by hounds. And so after it happened a few times, we started getting annoyed. Like, what is going on? Are these guys being irresponsible? What's going on? But then you look it up and, oh no, it's bear training season. All right, cool. No, I mean, they're doing what they're doing. And it's, you know, easy to get all bent out of shape, but, you know, quickly, easily looked up that regulation. Yeah, there's a million things. And then out of state, kind of like you were mentioning, going somewhere else, you know, I have family down in Louisiana and Tennessee, and so hunting is an option there as well. And so it's if you're juggling three different states, it's much easier to view it on the seasonreport.com dashboard, where you can save exactly what you care about, and that info is all accessible within one click. You know, that was my goal. Just, I wanted that information that you were trying to get really quickly, just save you all those steps of Googling and sifting through ads and scrolling through a PDF and all that stuff.
Right. And I don't know if anyone else has had this trouble, but during that process and looking into some other options, you know, for hunting out of state, there's some like questionable looking sites.
Oh yeah.
And I don't know if it's like a state with an old school website or like a scam site or something, you know, like,
so no, you're
hard to find, you know,
you're exactly right. I mean, the state fish and wildlife agencies do a great job, right? They are essential, but they're cash strapped. And so if you have, you know, good people that you're trying to give a living wage to do the important field work, and you have a culvert washout and you got to reinstitute that road, or you have to do a population study over here, you know, that if an old school website works and it kind of just gets the information out, even if it's clunky, I can see how that would be put low on the priority list. And, you know, that's just another one of those problems I'm trying to turn into a uniform platform.
Yeah, absolutely. Very cool. And then another thing, that I saw mentioned on there is like some foraging type information. Now, the first thing that comes up there is mushrooms, which personally, full disclosure, I'm not big on mushrooms, but I know a lot of people go really crazy for morels or something like that in the spring.
Absolutely.
You know, thing that you kind of list like seasons or I don't know if you call that ripe or harvesting time or what.
Yeah, I you know, it began with hunting, and you know, this is still very much hunting forward, but it's kind of matured into what I'm starting to call the hunter's almanac, where it is, if you know, hunters by and large are interested in what's growing in the woods. The vast majority of hunters I've ever known in my life all have a garden at home, and so jumping into all the different food types that you could get with your own hands felt like a very natural next jump.
Yeah, I think that's pretty cool. And if you want or can educate me on some of that, when people say foraging, like I said, like I immediately go to mushrooms, you know, that's what you see people post. Does that like go into other things? I guess, are there like, I don't know, wild nuts or something else?
Yeah, exactly. No, I have mushrooms. I kept it to the ones that are relatively, you know, I have disclaimers and stuff on there. You know, you have to make sure you're identifying everything correctly. Right. But, you know, I try to keep it to the ones that were pretty unique and hard to misidentify. And even still, for those mushrooms, I have little tips on how to identify and links to really good resources that go into much more detail than I want to, because I'm really just trying to get those dates and numbers and locations. And, you know, there's fruit. I mean, up northeast, I was seeing cherries in the database. I was, there's pawpaw, which is a North American kind of tropical plant. It's kind of like a banana, custardy, mango. There's raspberries, blackberries. I mean, you name it. There's a whole lot of stuff that you can find out in the woods.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no doubt. Down here in Florida, I've certainly seen, you know, my share of blackberries and one place I hunt even has kind of like a wild orange orchard, which those are pretty sour, but you know, still pretty cool.
Was that the Satsuma?
I'm not even 100% sure if that's what they are.
I was talking on another podcast and I started talking about Satsumas, and halfway through I realized I actually don't really know a lot about this, because the host was schooling me, and so I had to look it up, and because I have it as forageable, but it's originally I believe it's a Japanese variety of orange that they brought over, and then a lot of it escaped, and so it crosses that line between you could grow it in your garden or it grows wild, because it kind of favors that location.
Okay, well that's kind of cool. I'll have to do more research specifically. I can tell you these are very sour though, that's for sure.
Yeah. You should be able to find some pawpaw and maybe even some muscadine grapes. You know, those are really popular in the Gulf region.
Yep. I used to live a little further west, in fact, when I was real young, and we had muscadine grapes, and I liked them when I was a kid. I haven't, but that's pretty cool stuff to find out there.
Excuse you know that.
Oh, you're good. Even beyond, you know, just the hunting stuff, but you know, kind of to backtrack, if you don't mind, you know, maybe kind of tell how you got into hunting, or you know, whether you grew up or whatever kind of got you into the hunting type thing.
Yeah, I grew up in Colorado in an idyllic location, and that's about as much as I'm going to go into on the specifics of it, but it was this beautiful spot nestled up into the Cinco de Cristos and surrounded with nothing but public land. It was awesome. And it's like all the trailheads were our own, because nobody went there. Now I'm actually going there next week, and I've heard that the trailheads are quite popular. But I grew up out there going with my dad deer hunting, and then we moved down south, and it's just for the lack of public land, I just kind of got out of it, because it seemed so much more difficult to find a spot, and you had to pay money, and you know, then you're stuck hanging out with people that may or may not be fun to hang out with, all that kind of stuff, right? And so just kind of got out of it. And then in Virginia, I moved here, got back in the mountains, started hiking again, started thinking about hunting, and it was one of those perfect opportunity situations where a friend offered me to hunt on their property just as I was seriously looking up public land. And then it was just, it was off to the races. And I've been hunting for, I'd say, 5 years now, every year, and been fortunate enough to hardly buy any meat from the store in that time.
That's fantastic. That's great. That's my goal.
Oh, it's an awesome feeling.
That's awesome. Sorry, I'm looking straight out my truck window, and there's a hen turkey about to walk across the parking lot to me.
Oh yeah, I didn't see any turkey this spring season, and now I've already seen a dozen since then.
Oh, it's crazy, isn't it? That's how it goes.
Oh yeah.
You know, go out in the woods to hunt them, and you got camo and calls and everything, and you sit in the parking lot at work, and there you go.
Yep.
But anyway, that's cool. I've only been hunting about, speaking of that timeline, about 5 years.
Okay.
Myself. So, and here in Florida, that's, you know, you're talking about Colorado. The funny thing is, with the podcast and getting into hunting, I've always been interested in hunting, I guess you'd say, or not always, but for a long time, even though no one in my family hunted. And I watched a lot of like Hushin videos, which most people are going to be very familiar with.
Yeah.
You watch any hunting on YouTube or whatever, and it was like inspiring, you know, to me to like, man, you can do some cool stuff.
Oh, for sure.
But with that said, you know, I started like, oh, this is awesome. Public land, this and that. I'm going to look this stuff up. And then like, I look it up, and around me, you know, there's not hundreds of thousands of acres, you know, or whatever, you know, right around the house, you know, I mean,
it's tough
in Florida. I'm not saying there's not, but in comparison to the Western states, it is a totally different ball game.
For sure. I grew up, or I lived in Louisiana for a while, and for a good while, and same thing. It's just, yeah, there's public land, but you know, some of the public land that's available is literally where they put, oh, what is that famous prison, Angola. They put a prison out in the middle of the bayous because they were confident if anybody escaped, you know, the bayou would take care of them. So it's that kind of land where,
right,
you just can't go in there on a Friday night. You got to like game plan it, have some backup gear for something that breaks. You know, just the barrier to entry is so much higher.
Yeah. It's definitely different. And I'm in North Florida, so it's different than South Florida. Like, you know, there's some of those places that remind me of kind of what you're saying there, where it's like, you know, there are no dry paths to stands or or whatever. But it is interesting when you look at it that way. But the good thing is there are some resources out there, you know, with kind of what you're doing being one of them, that can help direct you in the right way. And if you have some help like that, or if you ask the right questions long enough, you know, you can find some stuff, most likely.
Yeah. And that's kind of my goal with this is, you know, I've had some people say that I should make the price point very high, but I think anybody that's interested in dropping a lot of money, they're going to drop a tremendous amount of money, right? I'm trying to make something for kind of the everyday hunter, the person getting into it, decrease that barrier to entry so we can get more people involved and caring about protecting it.
Yeah. You know, and it's crazy because I'm certainly not against leases and things like that. I have a great situation where I have permission on a lease, but, you know, I see ads and stuff for leases and it's like, it's not like an inordinate amount of acreage or whatever. And it's like only, you know, 6,000 a year or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I'm all for it if you can. That's great. But it's like, who are these people?
Well, I think that's what's beautiful about what Doug Durden's doing with his Sharing the Land initiative. I don't know if you're familiar with that. It's a new concept where he's trying to bring together hunters that don't have private land and want to hunt, and specifically people in those types of areas where there's not a lot of public land available. But then you have all these landowners that might have legitimate things that need done that they just need extra hands to help out with. And so it's a way to make those two parties that would otherwise never talk to one another. The hunter gets to help out a landowner and with whatever they need help with in exchange for hunting in the fall. I think those types of platforms are really going to help get more people involved and drive more license sales.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. Cause you know, I mean, most hunt people that hunt that I know, would be more than willing to do something like that. And to the budget side of things, you know, you'd be willing to invest a few hours or a few days or whatever it may come out to throughout the year. You know, you'd be more than willing to do that as opposed to dropping thousands and thousands of dollars on a lease type of situation.
Oh, absolutely. And you might have somebody who just can't do the money, but they might be one of the most skilled people to fix the problem that you have.
Yeah, exactly. And beyond that, you know, I said earlier, I'm not against leases or anything. You may have a lease and it may be 6 hours away and you might be more than happy to pick up a few properties in between there, you know?
So there's all for sure.
Where that could be, that could be cool.
But you know, I was thinking back to something you said and it cracked me up because you said you started down in Florida and now you're thinking about all the other possibilities like out west and all the different adventures you can go on. And I think I might be in an inverse direction from you where I enjoy like hiking out west. I love it. I've never hunted out west as an adult, which I'm sure once I do go on an elk hunt in Idaho, I'm sure I'll change my tune. But I have been doing a lot of the mountains here in Virginia and I'm finding that I love the tighter, more wooded areas, spot and stalk, versus those opportunities whenever I find a deer in a field that I have, you know, I have to figure out how to get 600 yards down the road quietly. I don't know. I'm just enjoying those tight corridors and being forced to read sign a lot more that the South and the East provide.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting how different it can be across the country. And I recently had Jacob Coons on, and he was talking about Eastern elk hunting, and you know, Virginia had their first ever elk tag draw this year. And so there's some interesting things in like Pennsylvania and Kentucky and places you don't think about elk hunting, but you know, you can be in, you know, basically the Appalachian Mountains hunting elk. So there's
some man, that's the wild thing about building the database that I did, because I get to see firsthand all these different things. So like Pennsylvania's got good opportunity. You know, I did not draw the Virginia tag this year, but I certainly put in for it.
Right.
Kentucky. I mean, even places like the Dakotas, and I think even plain states that you wouldn't ever think about elk. Now, they might only have like one or two tags, but there's still an opportunity there, which I never knew about.
Yeah, same here. And I know I talked to some guys with the Elevate Stand Company, and they killed elk in Kansas, you know, which,
yeah,
I mean, to me, that's Western, but, you know, compared to just thinking about New Mexico, Colorado and Utah, Nevada and all that, you know,
no,
that's a lot closer.
No, that's completely, I mean, it is closer. It's completely, it baffles my mind, honestly, because, you know, it wasn't rare to wake up and have an elk herd in our front yard when I grew up in Colorado.
Right.
And so it's just, I grew up with elk in this very mountainous environment, and then they reintroduced it here in the Appalachians, and they're not the Rockies, but it's very mountainous, and you have all these hollers and stuff. To think about an elk in Kansas is just hard to wrap my head around.
Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy. You wouldn't even think, but there's some opportunities out there. And talking about Virginia, I've also had Nathan Killen on, and he's, you know, big into traditional archery, and he does some amazing stuff in the mountains up there with a traditional bow, kind of like you're saying, just, you know, in the rough spots, you know, that people don't think about when they think of Eastern hunting or Southeastern hunting, but it's pretty amazing the opportunities that are there. You know, the deer density is lower, but that doesn't mean it can't be an awesome hunt.
It might be lower, but it's not destitute. I mean, they're everywhere up here.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember hearing that, you know, on some podcast or something like that. And, you know, where my brother lives in Virginia, there's like, they're trying to get people to do, you know, suburban tag, all kinds of stuff like that. You know, they're everywhere.
I believe it.
Kind of interesting, you know, which I know the topography and stuff like that can change pretty quick getting into the more mountainous areas, but it's still pretty amazing.
What I really like about the hollers out here is you can stand in the right spot, and if you are at like a nice choke point where a lot of hollers feed into, you can almost hear everything that's going on in every direction. It's like you're sitting in one of those whisper dishes that you played with as a kid, and you can just hear the faintest everything in every direction, and there's hardcore directionality to it. So it's like I've tracked turkey that way, where I just hear this bustle and I see them, but I scare them, and then I go down to this choke point. I'm like, all right, well, they're in that part right there, and then wait enough time, all right, they've crossed over the ridge. It's really cool out here, that, and I don't think you get that, you don't get it out west because everything is so large, but east, it's that nice mix between like mountains and flatlands.
Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty interesting stuff. And, you know, it's pretty flat here in Florida, but, you know, that's kind of cool how you can hear stuff like that in different directions. I don't think I've ever heard that exact, you know, description, but it makes sense.
Man, I want to get down into some of your swampy areas though. I think that'd be a blast.
Yeah. Yeah. It can be pretty cool. I mean, where I hunt is not super, I don't call it swamp at all. I mean, people from other places would probably look at some of the area and say, yeah, that is pretty swampy. you know, there are definitely some areas where it's pretty wild, you know, what they have down here as far as the alligators and snakes and everything that you can get into real quick. So,
man, I can't tell you how many times I've been mud riding on a trail with family down in Louisiana and see a copperhead or a water moccasin. Yeah, it's another world down there around the Gulf.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is wild. And, you know, when I was a kid, like I said, I lived a little further west, and we lived on what's called Lake Seminole. And it's a very, for a lake, I would call it very swampy. I would actually just call it a swamp, but they call it a lake. So, but, you know, I saw alligators, you know, when I was a little kid, and snakes, and it's just, it is a different world. There's no doubt about that. It's very unique, but it's pretty crazy what you can get into.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, the alligator, and do you have wild boar there as well? I know I have family in the Western Gulf that have those problems, but are they problematic in Northern Florida?
Yes, there are a lot of wild boar around here. It is interesting. There's a pretty large property that I hunt that has almost none. But the surrounding area, there's plenty of pigs around here.
Yeah, that is a intense swamp hunt too, because whenever you have been wading through the muck and then all of a sudden you find one of their bedding spots and it just smells horrible. Like, oh, I'm on them. Oh no, I'm really on them, and they're probably on me too.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's crazy. I've never really done like the pig hunting, but that's on very high on my list of things to try. So
it's, I've gone hunting unsuccessfully for them, but I have trapped one, and I think I would prefer hunting it. I don't know if you've, have you ever trapped anything?
No, not really. Not to speak of.
Not to bash or anything. I just think it was a little different than I anticipated personally, especially like feeding them out for a day or two. I was like, I like hunting where it's quick and clean.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I know in some areas it seems like they have so much of an overpopulation that they like need to do that a lot or whatever, like depending on the property.
And this was the case there.
Just to get rid of them. But I don't think that would be enjoyable.
Like, oh, no. He was – this property, they were – I mean, they were getting – if I remember correctly, like dozens a month.
Oh.
It was overrunning everything. And it seems like the numbers have gone down. But I got to say, the meat on those things is incredible.
Nice. That's good to hear for sure.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've heard a lot of whole – you know, everybody has – some story about how it's bad or turned rancid or anything like that. Mine was phenomenal. The only thing I didn't like was like the stomach meat, that mm-hmm. area. It has such a high fat content. It started tasting weird. I wasn't a fan of the fat, but right. The meat itself tasted like a brisket, honestly.
Wow. That's encouraging for sure.
Oh yeah.
did you get like, hams cut and like, or do it yourself or whatever, and like bacon and all that, or like how did you
I did a little bit of everything. I do all that myself. It's my background is medical science, and so when you've done a lot of muscle removals, it just is very natural on a larger animal. But so I did some hams, I did some bacon, but that gets where I'm talking about where I didn't really like it. Like some of the bacon I made, I did it all right, but that flavor that I didn't like in a few different cuts was all the same, and it was all just very fatty. We took a piece of fat off and rendered it a little bit too, and you could smell that funk was in the fat.
Okay. Yeah, I got you. Yeah, I'd probably skip over that one then. That's cool though. Yeah, that's something that would be really interesting to me is honestly for, you know, for meat purposes on the hogs for sure.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I think the challenge there is just they're so tough.
like getting them cleaned quick enough in that hot temperature.
Yeah. Yeah, I've thought about that too. You know, like I was thinking, oh, that'd be a good off-season hunt. You know, we're already in the 90s here, so
yeah.
Man, that would definitely be something very close in the back of my mind on a hunt like that. Like, we need to get this thing recovered and cleaned like ASAP.
Oh yeah, yeah. The one that I got, I think we got on it really quickly after we put it down, and I mean, instantly started working on it. But I think it took us about an hour with two or three people breaking it down. And then it smells like it's going bad so much faster than a deer.
Yeah. Yeah, I gotcha. That's pretty cool. You know, of all the animals that you've had the opportunity to harvest, what is or has been your favorite cook, you know, or, you know, you've got your favorite meat from or whatever?
You know, venison is a staple. That's kind of just my baseline nowadays. But black bear, my gosh, that stuff tastes good. I didn't expect to like it, and it is complex. It's like it's in between a pork and a beef, I'd say.
Okay, very interesting. Yeah, I've talked to a bear hunter or two. That's interesting. I would definitely be up to try it. I feel like I've heard like you almost have to go low and slow on like bear before. Is that hard fast rule, I guess, but
you know, I made a lot of sausage. I wouldn't be able to speak to that there. I have some roasts that, you know, my summertime is finally here and just getting a little bit more time. So I plan on doing some bear roasts, which I'd probably go low and slow, but no, I haven't found it to cook any different than beef, honestly. And it's got enough fat in it that it will caramelize and sear. And, you know, you don't want to go medium rare or anything like that. I definitely cook with a thermometer on boar and bear. But No, I wouldn't say there's anything really abnormal about it.
Okay, cool. That's awesome. I love venison, and I love sausage in general, so. I'm definitely with you on both of those. That sounds awesome. But so let's see, beyond that, is, you know, it's pretty universal that the backstrap is like, you know, the best thing on a deer. Do you agree with that?
I mean, yeah, it's a coveted piece for a reason. Yeah, there's I think I'm this year gonna try to get into more fancier preparations, like the French presentation with the ribs still in it.
Oh, nice.
But no, I love every, I actually have one thought out. I'm going to put it in the sous vide a little bit later this afternoon.
That's awesome, man. That sounds great.
Have you ever cooked with a sous vide?
No, I have not.
I thought they were ridiculous at first. I thought it was just another one cook contraption, or, you know, one use contraption to clutter up your kitchen. But it is, it's just such a versatile thing. You put the meat in the bag, you set it to the temperature. You can have it as rare as you want, but you know, because the temperature was reached, it's safe to consume. You don't have to worry about bacteria. And it changes the way that I'm able to cook those rare backstraps and stuff like that.
Huh, that's really cool. So it's like, I'm not super familiar with it at all. It's, you put it in a bag and it...
Oh, yeah. So what it is it's like... It's kind of like a wand that you stick in a bucket of water. And so you can do this with a stock pot and just fill up a stock pot 3/4 of the way full. You take your piece of meat, you put it into a shrink wrap or a vacuum seal bag with some butter and salt and pepper. And then you turn on the sous vide cooker. And so what it does is it circulates the water through and it brings it up to whatever temperature you set it at for whatever amount of time you set it at. And it just keeps it steady. And so everything in that pot will be at the exact temperature that you want for, you know, 4 or 6 hours. And it just, I found it to be easier to cook that way versus firing up the grill sometimes. because you can kind of set it in a similar way that you're setting a crock pot before you go to work or something like that. And then you come home and it's perfectly cooked. And then you just heat up a pan, sear it on both sides, and you're 100% done. And you can make another bag for your vegetables and stuff like that. And yeah, everything comes out perfect temp. Crack open the bag, it's nice and steamy.
That sounds really cool.
Yeah, it is. I thought at first it was just something ridiculous, but the more I use it, the more it just elevates everything you do.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. Cool, man. Well, I've got just a couple more questions, and then I'm gonna get back to work. But
yeah, no worries.
I appreciate you taking the time to join me today.
No, I appreciate you having me on, man.
Yeah, I was gonna ask you. I know you said you lived in Louisiana for a while. Have you ever cooked crawfish?
Oh yeah, I think you are forced to.
Yeah, exactly. I love crawfish, man.
Oh yeah, no, we are one of two sets of Louisianans on our street, and so the crawfish and crab boils are very much alive here. We're keeping that flavor profile going.
I like it. I like it, man. And then kind of along those lines, you know, since you spent time in Louisiana, and then it kind of ties in with everything, you know, the My Season Report does, it carries does it carry fishing information and things like that?
So I am so currently it has hunting that is county game, game zone specific across the lower 48 in Hawaii. I'm tackling Alaska this summer. I'm gonna make that in there very location specific. And then it has across the lower 48. It has foraging. It has gardening. Anything that you would readily grow in your home garden. And then fishing is being added. So it's a long way of answering your question. But fishing, you know, every aspect of this is kind of a different sets of experiments where I'm trying to see what people find very useful or what they don't like. And fishing, I've started with the coastal states, because which you should go check out Florida, because I have freshwater, which is pretty much just statewide, and then Gulf, and then Atlantic. Each three of those have their own separate rules. And so you know, I think Florida is a really good showcase for the fishing. Again, just trying to be able to pull that stuff up instantly. And then if you're on a boat, you can just kind of check it out. Oh, I got this. Cool. Can I keep it? No. Or I can only keep one. Oh, and that's my one for the year kind of stuff.
Right. Yeah, that's really cool. You know, kind of like you're saying, it seems like it kind of naturally fits, but you also have to see what the desire for that is, or the demand for it. And coastal states, you know, places like Florida are probably going to be higher on that list. So very cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, obviously with what you have there is a ton of work, research, compiling all this stuff, and just a ton of work that you're putting into it. So, which I know it's a product and it's for sale, but still, definitely, thanks to you, respect to you for doing all that work and putting it out there so that people can take advantage of it.
Yeah, I appreciate it. And just give it a try. And it's a 2-week free trial, and you can quickly get a sense if it's going to help you out. And there's several iterations on the way currently in development. It's an ever evolving project. And I think it's just getting more and more useful to help you find, obtain, and produce fantastic meals with really good ingredients.
Awesome. Well, thanks again for taking some time, and I've enjoyed learning more about it, more about kind of your journey in hunting. So I appreciate it, and we'll have to talk again sometime.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Yes, sir. All right, I will cut the recording right there, man.
Sounds good, man.
Cool. Well, I appreciate you working with the schedule and everything. And
oh, no worries. I had the same thing on my end, so it was chaotic on both sides.
Yep. Yep. And I think you've been on with Kent Boucher of First Gen Hunter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, he's a good guy.
Yeah, he's a great guy. And then the one that we messaged about, the bear archery guy.
Yeah, yeah, Dylan. Dylan's a great guy. I really like him.
Yeah.
I've been on Harvesting Nature. There's a Backcountry Hunters one recorded, a few other like outdoor cooking. So I'm making the circuit. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, yeah. I'm probably, I would dare say I am the smallest of any of those you named, but I'm still on and happy.
No, man. No, I don't think it's about size. I think it's about the values you're putting out there. And I'm a firm believer that like values create value. And I love talking to people who are doing yeoman's work and doing the real thing.
Cool, man. Well, I totally agree and really appreciate it. And awesome. I'm gonna get back to work, so I'll let you go. But
sounds good. Do you have a time frame in mind? I mean, I'm in no rush. I'm just thinking forward.
Yeah, I will actually probably have this one ready by Monday.
Okay, cool.
I do most of my release on Monday mornings, and so this one won't take too much editing. We haven't had any big technical difficulties, which I certainly have had before, but this one's gone pretty smooth. That's good.
If you want me to use a picture, I got
it. Yeah, I'll email you one. I'll send you one later today.
Like I said, it'll be Monday morning, so no rush on that. But
cool.
To be good on Monday, man.
All right. Thank you. You have a good weekend.
Yes, sir. Absolutely, man. You too.
All right.
See ya.
Take care.
Bye.
Thanks so much for listening today to the Wannabe Hunting Podcast. Whether you've been hunting for 40 years or you're thinking about going this season for the first time, the thing that ties us all together is that we want to be hunting. We're thinking about it today at work or heading home or doing other things. That's why we're listening to hunting podcasts like this one. So that's where we come from. We appreciate you tuning in and joining in with us. Our goal at the Want to Be Hunting Podcast is to be the family-friendly hunting podcast. There's a lot of podcasts out there and a lot of good information, so we want to bring that information in a good family-friendly way, and just enjoy the conversations that come our way. And I've been so blessed to have some great guests on, many great guests on, and appreciate them, appreciate the timing and scheduling work that folks have done in order to come on with me. So it really is a lot of fun and a great learning opportunity for me and everyone listening. So we've enjoyed it. I just want to say thank you again to Chris for coming on. Great information. He's done a lot of work on this and put in a lot of effort to compile a lot of information. So it's very cool that that's available to help hunters out there. So thank you again for listening today. Thank you again to Anabolic Grow for sponsoring the episode. And we appreciate everybody. Hope you're having a good summer and hope you're getting food plots in, all that good stuff. And hope you're practicing with the bow, doing whatever you got to do to get ready for the fall. So we're all looking forward to it. So hope everyone has a great week. We appreciate you once again. As always, honor God, work hard, have fun, and keep hunting.